this is episode one of the Wearing History podcast. This is Lauren. I'm the gal behind Wearing History, and we're trying our first shot ever at doing a podcast. It's kind of exciting. You know, there's not a whole lot out there for people like us who tend to like historical and vintage sewing. So I'm just kind of adding my voice to the fray out there, and hopefully you guys can get a little something out of this podcast experiment. Today, I am by myself. This is the very first podcast for Wearing History, so I don't have a guest today. However, in the future, I'd really love to have guests on or co-hosts. So if you know someone that you think that I should interview, make sure you leave me a comment and let me know. I'm going to go through the list here. I had folks who had asked me questions, and I'll answer a few of these. I don't think I can get to all of them right now, but I will do my best to do some. So, what Wearing History is, first of all, so I can introduce myself if you don't already know me. Wearing History started as a blog. I have wearinghistoryblog.com, which is my blog now. I actually started on Blogspot, and I moved over to a WordPress self-hosted site. And I really enjoy my little blog. I haven't done it in quite a long time because it does take quite a bit of preparation and quite a lot of time. But I've shared so many resources on there that I have in my personal collection. I've shared my projects. I've shared so much stuff in there. And that's really was the jumping off point for making my patterns. So I think most of you now know me because of my sewing patterns, which is Wearing History. I primarily focus on stuff that is from the 1900s to the 1940s. I just came out with the very first 1950s pattern. I do both stuff based on original period sources and some stuff that I've drafted myself. So I really enjoy bringing to life historical fashion in a way that the modern person can enjoy and implement into their wardrobe or for their impressions or just for fun dressing up time. You know, I guess I just never got over playing dress up. So that's why I started making the sewing patterns. I had a massive antique pattern collection, and it seemed like such, I don't know, a sadness that I had all these things in my possession, and I realistically am never going to sew all this in my lifetime. It would be a real shame to not get some of this stuff out there into the public's hands so that they can recreate stuff that hasn't been sewn in 40, 60, even 100 years. So that's part of why I started doing what I did. Now, I also have an Instagram. You may follow me on there. I think at the time of this recording, I've got around 15,000 followers. I forget how many I've got. So I'm not like, you know, internet superstar, but I just really enjoy nerding out over the things that I enjoy. And I thought the podcast would be another way to connect with people. But what really made me want to start this podcast was I started listening to other podcasts having to do with the craft industry. And I really enjoyed how people would talk about the business side of things. And they would interview people who were big into their hobby and their niche, into how they got into it, what they've learned, what sort of products they create. And I think that's something that our community really needs. We need to be able to connect to each other on a personal level. I think on the internet, you know, it's really easy to think that someone is bigger than they actually are. It's easy these days to make pretty flashy graphics or really good copy, things that make you seem like you're this like huge business. But in reality, I think there's a lot of us that are sitting in our pajamas at home creating this stuff because we just like it, you know? I can't tell you how many times I've gotten an email that says, "Dear Wearing History, please forward this to the department which can help me." And I'm like, oh, well, that would be me. Me or my cats? I don't know. So I know that other people have felt the same way that are small business. And they have these really, some have these incredible followers. Just, you know, tens of thousands of followers. And people think that they're this huge megacorp like Amazon, but it's really just, you know, a couple people, maybe a couple family members even, that are creating these really awesome products for our market. So the point of this podcast is to talk with people who are bloggers, they're Instagrammers, they're small businesses, you know, people who have a lot of knowledge in different areas, things that we can learn from, because, you know, reading about it on the internet is one thing. And, you know, in this day and age, people are so quick with what they look at. They look at it and a second later, it's gone out of memory. But when you can hear a tone of voice, I think you can really connect to a person on a different level, and you can really hear the way that the voice gives importance to certain parts of what they're writing about. So, you know, I think we've all been there on Facebook or social media where we've said something in innocence and it's taken completely out of context. Hopefully, connecting with people on a more, I don't know, emotional level that you can get from voice will help us to just be part of one another in a different way. So that's the point of the Wearing History podcast. That's why I have this little pet project that's just really for fun, because it sounds like it might be fun. So if you're listening to me, hello, I'm glad you're listening to me. Hopefully we make this something awesome. But let's get to some of these questions you guys have asked me. I've been around for, oh goodness, I've been collecting since I was 14, vintage clothing and vintage sewing patterns, when I was about 17 or 18. So I am now in my late 30s. So I've been doing it for a while. And through a lot of this, you know, I started in a time when you couldn't go on Pinterest and find pretty pictures. You know, we were pretty much limited to the library, and the world has changed so much since then. But that's a whole nother podcast that we can talk about all that. But yeah, I've been sewing since I was 8. My cousin helped teach me how to sew Renaissance costumes and doll clothes by hand. That's how I started. And then in high school, I was sewing scrunchies and more Renaissance costumes, but this time with a machine, you know. And then I just went on from there to go to college. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to be an English major or if I wanted to be a art major. And then I found out that an acquaintance through high school was actually studying costume design. And I thought that sounded like a lot of fun. Excuse me while I make some noise and move, because someone started a lawnmower next door. So I thought that fashion school and costume design would actually be really cool and part of what would really plug into what I felt like were my personal abilities. So that's how I got started. I went from a hobby to attempting a career. And out of school, I started my first business around 2003 or 2004. I thought that what I was going to do was make wedding gowns that were inspired by historical and vintage design. Everyone in fashion school absolutely hated me because they wanted me to be all like, fashion forward, you need to look to the future, because vintage wasn't cool yet. You know, vintage being cool is a relatively modern idea. In the past, it was like, these clothes are old, and unless you were not well off, you don't want to wear old clothes. So when I was in school, it was very much a, yeah, don't do anything old, because that's just either really weird, or why would you want anything vintage? So historical clothing was really not anything my fashion professors wanted to see. Now, by the time that I was done, I actually ended up going to school for fashion design for film. This actually does answer a question. Someone asked me how I got into this, so this is answering that question. I want to do fashion design for film. So I went to fashion school. I got into a program where only 12 people a year were accepted. I was very honored to get into that program, but I actually didn't finish it. And the reason why I didn't finish it was because I decided that film costuming was not my thing at all. Like, oh my goodness, this world with all its different quirks is not a world for someone like me. I am a relatively quiet person in general. I, especially then, was somewhat reserved. And I honestly thought that my work should speak more than who I know. And in some industries, it really is a lot about who you know. And I know that I'll probably get some people saying, oh no, that's not true, I've made it. Now that's awesome, great. That wasn't really my experience. So I went into the program telling the people who were interviewing that I really wanted to do historical costume. That was where my passion was. And they said, oh yeah, no problem. So I went into the school, got halfway through, and by the time it came to team up with, oh gosh, it's that famous school, American Film Institute, AFI, with their students to do costume design, the only one left was something that was completely against my morals. And nothing to do with historical costume. It was all stylist work. So I actually ended up quitting. I just quit. I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this. I've got my fashion degree. I partially finished my costume design program, and most of the costume design program, because it was for film, was stylist work, and that wasn't where my heart was. So since then, I've actually had absolutely no regrets. I don't need an extra piece of paper to tell me what I'm passionate about. I learned what I needed to learn to go forward, and so that's what I did. I got my fashion degree. I got an AA. I did not get a BA. My school did not offer it at that time. I went to the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising in Los Angeles. I know I get a lot of questions about where to go to school. That's where I went to school. When I was in school, it was a private school. It was not an accredited school, which is a whole nother set of issues. But as of now, I've heard that it's like actually really a lot better, and you can get your accredited degree from FITM. So this isn't to like bash FITM. It just wasn't where I was supposed to be at that time. That was a really long explanation. But yeah, out of school, started my first business, thought I wanted to make wedding gowns, decided that I also didn't have the stamina for that. That takes a whole way on people. You got to be a people person, you know? You got to be really good with the public. And I am a super nerd. Like, I guess I'm cool in my own way among fellow nerds. But I just didn't have that je ne sais quoi to get out there and do what I needed to do in order to market myself at that time. I was only in my early 20s, like, had a lot to learn. So my first business was actually not successful at all. I got a lot of debt and kept on going. You know, I tried, but it didn't work out well. And it made me really think a lot about what I wanted to do with my life. So out of that, I came and got a regular job. I was working doing graphic design type stuff because I knew how to do Photoshop and Illustrator and all that. And the world now for that stuff, man, there's so much that I had no idea where to start. But that was my other job. And around this time, I started being involved with the San Diego Costume Guild. And I met people through going to costume college who were involved in the theater here in San Diego. So I ended up getting introduced to people who worked at the San Diego Opera at a tea at, she's going to be the Costume College Dean this year. That's Val Labor. And she introduced me to these great people who worked at the San Diego Opera. And I went down there for my first interview and showed them pictures. And they're like, all right, you're hired. And I was like, wait, don't I have to like fill out an application or like do it? Nope, you're good. And so I started. Like, I worked for the San Diego Opera for 3 or 4 seasons. If you don't know, most theater work around here anyways is not year round. It's like for a set amount of months a year. Some years you do builds, which means you create the costumes from scratch and then you'll have a longer season. But a lot of the time it's altering ready-made costumes to fit the actors that you have. So I had a ton of experience hemming a million different monk's robes. I found all sorts of interesting things in hems that you don't want to find. And I did get to build a lot of costumes from scratch, including we did one called Votsek. I don't know if I even said that right, but we got all these amazing 1910s stuff in from Angel's Costumes in England. Original 1910s hats and suits. Oh my gosh, they were amazing, you guys. Like, I really wish I had better photos of the stuff that I had seen, but I really had a lot of fun. But you know, costume work is super stressful. And that was another thing that I was like, man, this is great, but man, it's not all year long. Like, what am I going to do? So I started doing the patterns in my off season at the opera as a way to kind of survive between seasons. And you know, in the beginning it was super small. I had like, I hand drew vintage patterns that were in public domain in Sharpie, took them somewhere and got them photocopied and put out some patterns. I think maybe 4 or 5 patterns. I started with one. And then
And they just did a couple more and a couple more. I was surprised that they were actually started selling. I was like, gosh, you know, there's more than like three people in the world that want to sew vintage. This is awesome. So that's how wearing history patterns got started, is something between seasons. And, you know, it wasn't big enough to support me. It's still actually quite a small company. It may look like super fancy, but I'm actually quite small. And I do everything. Well, my husband right now is helping me fill orders, and I have a little girl, and it's great, and it helps a little bit, but, you know, I'm not like a superstar, right? Like, I just like to make cool patterns. So anyways, what I ended up doing was having to take another job. This time I worked at the La Jolla Playhouse, and around this time the USPS had started changing all their postal regulations, so stuff was crazy expensive for international. And I realized that, you know what, I'm starting to take off as a company, and if I don't make some adjustments, I'm never going to survive. So what I ended up doing was starting to jump on the e-pattern wagon, and I think I was one of the first vintage pattern companies to get in to the e-pattern type of market. So that's how I started doing the e-patterns, because it was really just like, why would someone internationally pay? I think at the time it was $15 to ship something. Plus, I think at that time I had a different printer, so it was like $28 a pattern plus $15 in shipping. Like, there's no way that anybody, you know, 8 years ago was going to pay that much money for something. So I really started looking into the e-patterns, and it was really a big leap of faith. And honestly, it's the best thing that I ever did for my business, especially since I have a little girl. It makes just everything so much more manageable. Anyways, that's a really long explanation for how I got to where I am now, but that's where we're at. So let's see what other questions I have here. That answers how I got started. I had a lot of how you got started questions. Will you visit with other seamstresses? Yes, I will. I really hope so. I hope that I get some friends and colleagues here to come and talk to you guys. I know that Denise Hendricks really wants to come on and talk about her embroideries, and I'm thrilled because she's an absolutely wonderful person and extremely talented. And I don't know much about embroidery, but she certainly does. So I think she can let us clue us in on that. And we have some really cool topics we're tossing around the idea of doing. It'll be really fun to have someone to bounce off of. I think you guys will enjoy that. So sources for vintage fabric, eBay and Etsy, and or fabric sources for vintage clothing. I sell fabric on my website, wearinghistory.clothing. I don't think a lot of people know that, but yeah, I have some great vintage repro fabrics on my site. A lot of midweight cottons, and you know, there's a lot of like hate for the quilting cottons, but let me tell you, if you look at original garments, there's actually quite a lot of original garments use exactly quilting weight cotton from, you know, the 1900s until now, really. So you can make tons of sportswear from these great midweight reproduction cottons. A lot of like house dresses and sportswear was all almost exactly that type of fabric weight and fabric print. So yeah, I have that. I have rayon left over from our Kickstarter. Oh, I didn't talk about that. We can do that another time. And I've got some really cool waffle pique and some other stuff. Other than that, I tend to go to the Los Angeles Fabric District because I'm a couple hours away from there. So I get a lot of my stuff in person in Los Angeles. And then I'll look around on fabric.com or Fashion Fabrics Club for fabrics as well. You tend to stick with more like natural fabric or natural synthetics like rayon. Those are all really great for vintage clothing. So I would stick with stuff like that. I can talk more about fabric a future time too. Share a sewing disaster. Oh my gosh, you guys, my first historical costume was an absolute disaster. I was probably 18 years old. It was my first costume, but it was the first one where I actually wore outside of a Renaissance fair. I made this absolutely hideous Civil War ball gown. I don't even really like Civil War, but something about it, and you guys will probably even know what I'm talking about, like a Heidi Marsh pattern, I think it was, and it had these swags with these flowers holding up. Oh my gosh, I got the most awful, awful. I don't even like pink. I don't like Civil War, and I don't like pink. I don't know how I ended up doing this. And I'm not saying I don't like Civil War for other people. I think it looks fantastic on other people. But on me, it just looks like weird. I don't know. Maybe I need to give Civil War another chance and try something that is a little bit different. Because I have seen Civil War on other people, and I'm like, oh, I'd actually wear that. That's really cool. But this one, no one should wear this. There's nothing against that pattern. Like, I'm sure people have made that pattern absolutely incredible. But my version was a pale pink poly taffeta No, sorry, polysatin. So even worse. Pale pink polysatin polychiffon overlay with these awful cabbage rose on the swoops. No boning, absolutely horrible tension on my machine, so all the panels for the pieces were all gathered up and awful. And I wore it to a Victorian dance, and I could tell as soon as I walked in that I had done something wrong. Like, people actually turned around and stared at me, and not in a good way, if you know what I mean. So I was actually quite intimidated to go to any historical events for quite a long time after the horrible pink muffin experience. So yeah, that would definitely be a disaster. A triumph. I really like my Tissot dress that I made, that one white one with all of the miles of pleats that I did with the yellow ribbons. That was actually quite a triumph. I enjoyed sewing that dress. Oh my gosh, but those pleats, I must have been pleating fabric for weeks. And that was like at a time where I could actually sew every day. It took weeks to hem and sew those darn pleated ruffles, but it was worth it, man. Wearing that thing made me feel so pretty. And I think that's part of the big goal in sewing, isn't it? You want to make something that makes you feel good. I really felt really pretty in that dress. So that was really fun. I enjoyed that dress. I need to get some alterations so I can wear that one again. Vintage Techniques or Sewing Books. I actually have a blog post on this. I'm going to have to add a link. I love everything by, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, Mary Brooks Pickens, I think her name is, the one that did the Women's Institute books. Those books are amazing. Those books are really, really good. So I would say that is really good. There's another one that's from the Edwardian era called, I think it's called American Sewing Step by Step. Something like that. It's really good too, but my blog post that I have on should have all of the titles for you so you can check those out. Will you visit with other seamstresses? Yes, I already said that. Let's see. How did you learn it all? Well, I think that I talked about that a little bit. Fashion school, trial and error working for theater, and a whole lot of doing stuff on my own and researching. I'm really into just learning by any method I can, whether it be book or now we have YouTube. I really, really get a kick out of finding old techniques and seeing how they work. So I think a lot of my sewing is actually driven by learning something new rather than making something new, if that makes sense. Having something new to wear is fun, but I'd rather find the journey to get there and learn different things along the way. That's what really gives me thrill. And fabric shopping, because who doesn't love fabric shopping? I think everybody does. Let's see, what else we got? I'd love to sew my own clothing, but I get overwhelmed and don't have anyone to teach me. About a podcast about the basics. You know, I think this is a really common question. People really want to sew, but they don't know how to start. And I don't think a podcast really can answer that as well as something like a video can. If you're doing historical sewing, I really recommend that you check out Jennifer's page, Historical Sewing. So she has all these fantastic video tutorials that you can sign up for, these video online classes. I think that that's probably the best way to learn. Other than in person. In person is always amazing. So if you can get to your local community college, they often will have sewing classes that can really help you get started. So I also have a YouTube channel. If you go to Wearing History on YouTube, then you can see a lot of pattern tutorials that I've done. So you can see videos on there that can help you out. I have not done other podcasts, someone asked. I haven't done any other podcasts at all, but like I said, I have a YouTube channel. So I have some videos up on there. Drafting for a period cut versus modern sensibility. This is a really in-depth question, actually. I can't really go into that in depth right now, but yeah, I think that the modern person is not entirely used to a vintage cut. So she mentions the smooth sailing trousers. Yeah, I started, those took a lot of finessing. And I think a lot of that I learned while I was working in theater from working with one of the tailors there, how to, you know, adjust the crotch length and do the sewing and everything in a way that'll make it a lot more flattering. So yeah, the smooth sailing patterns, people call those a reproduction pattern a lot. It's actually not a reproduction pattern. The blouse definitely started from a vintage pattern, and the pants actually, it's like worlds apart, but they actually started from a very saggy, crotched, horrible fitting pants pattern as well. But I made so many alterations, they're almost indecipherable from each other at this point. So yeah, the Smooth Sailing, I can honestly say, is my own draft. It just is completely different than anything period, but it hits all the marks for what you want in a period pant pattern, or what I want anyways. I basically wanted to make a pant pattern that I could wear, and I've made it over and over and over and over again. I really, really enjoy those pants. So, you know, I'm not really one to toot my own horn, but because I enjoy sewing it, I think it's an okay pattern. So, yeah, people nowadays really like their armholes a lot lower than vintage, and I don't usually mess with armholes because the high cut is just so much better for movement. Modern people with the low armholes, when you lift up your arms and your whole shirt gets lifted up with you and untucked from your pants, you don't really want that, you know? Especially if you're swing dancing or doing any kind of reenacting, you really need the hit of the armhole to be up higher than we're used to today. I'm not talking about, like, you know, we all kind of have forward rolling shoulders in this day and age because of how much we're on the internet and how much we slump over. And I definitely have horrible posture. So I'm not talking about the front armhole curve. I'm talking about the actual depth of the armhole from your armpit down to your side. That when you lower that down, it gives you a lot less movement. So that's one of the things that I don't really mess with. Apart from that, I think our proportions have changed quite a lot than in the past. Of course, back then they had girdles and everything, so they had different proportions based on what was fashionable. But in general, I think people are getting a little bit more curvy, and I can't say why. Like, you know, someone into food science or nutrition could probably really go into this, but people always say, well, people were smaller back then. I don't think that's actually accurate. It's just that our proportions are changing, and I think that does come down to a lot of first of all, not wearing undergarments since you were a teenager, but also what we put into our bodies is different than people put in the past. And, like, you know, when you think about periods like the Great Depression, like World War II, when either you had food rationing. There we go. When you had food rationing and you were really limited on what you could eat, because of the war effort, or the Great Depression, when people were really starving and, you know, they had to, you know, you've seen pictures, go to the soup kitchen line and all this stuff. It really had an effect on children, you know, and how they could grow. Now, I am not an expert on this, so you're going to have to plug into some other history podcast to learn more about that. But yeah, like, you know, proportions back then and proportions now are a little bit different. Now, my body type particularly sits almost exactly right in line with the vintage 30s, 40s patterns. Like, my proportions are match exactly the pattern envelope, and I've always been that way. And I know that's not the way that a lot of people are. That's just genetically how my body type is. So that's just, I guess that's a little bit about that. We can go into it more in the future. How vintage affects your movement and body language. I think it does affect your movement depending on the time period. I think wearing a corset and the undergarments can definitely affect how you move. Vintage clothing, I don't think necessarily changes the way we move. If we're talking about post-1910s clothing, I think that a lot of people that I see put on vintage clothing and they stand and move in exactly the same type of posture that they do. Now, someone else might have a different opinion on this, but that is my personal take on it. How I got started, we talked about that. Newbie mistakes. I think that the poly satin was a pretty good newbie mistake. I think the cutting, you know, I wasn't particular with cutting, and I didn't really understand the whole process behind a pattern, like notches. So if you cut a pattern and you kind of give it extra, like, it's just not going to work right? I used to be really loosey-goosey in my cutting when I first started out as a teenager, and I realize now that there's a reason why patterns are shaped the way they are, and there's a reason why seam allowance is supposed to be the way it is. Like, if you don't do it uniform, the pieces aren't going to match up, right? So, yeah, I think those were some of my mistakes, and I still am after people. Mark your notches. Mark your notches. Make sure you cut your notches, because there's a reason why they exist. And when people say, oh, I have a hard time setting in sleeve, I think a lot of time you have a problem setting in a sleeve and putting a sleeve in backwards is because you haven't marked your notches. If you have a single one on one side and a double one on the other side, then you can tell which one's the front and back. Now, Obviously, sometimes I'm tired and I set a sleeve in backwards. I think we all do that, right? The seam ripper is your friend. But that's, you know, those are some of my newbie mistakes for sure. Vintage patterns and storing them. I have a blog post on this as well. So I'm going to probably add some links to the blog post. I'm actually getting a little bit longer than I had hoped for my first podcast here. So I think I might get stopped for now. And we'll go back to some of these other questions in a future podcast. But I hope that you guys have really enjoyed listening to a little bit about me. And keep the questions coming. If you think of anything that you want to know that I can answer, I would definitely love to talk with you about it. And please, please tune in the future, because we're going to have some really fun guests. I've already got a couple of guests lined up. And as we go on, it's going to be really fun. I don't think this is going to be a regular podcast in the sense that we're not going to have a new one every Tuesday or whatever, but I will definitely keep adding to them and I will alert you all when we get them. If you haven't already, sign up for my Wearing History newsletter. Put a link to that as well. And we are going to turn off now. So thank you very much for listening. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.